Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Matters of Life and Death, a podcast from Premier Unbelievable.
Hello and welcome to Matters of Life and Death. As always, I'm Tim White and I'm joined by my dad, John White. Hi, John.
Hi, Tim. It's good to be here.
So this is a part two on dependence, autonomy, aging. Last week we kind of introduced the idea we've talked about before about the kind of demographic time bomb and the fact that a growing numbers of people are living older and older, but with more and more kind of chronic health conditions and kind of sketched out this idea of society's response to this to be about trying to stave off dependence as long as possible and to kind of lionize and reify the idea of remaining autonomous and an individual as long as possible, the saga holiday stereotype of living the dream even in your silver years.
That's what I'm hanging on to, Tim. I hope you're going to back me in this.
Well, don't burn through too much of the inheritance on your saga cruises if it's all right. and we talked about how that plays into some of the discussions around assisted suicide and euthanasia and statistics around how people fear both that loss of autonomy and the crippling fear of being a burden to others is pushing people in some jurisdictions to choose to end their lives early, as it were, and even causing some philosophers to kind of promote the idea of so-called altruistic suicide to spare your family and dependents from having to care for you in your old age. And we kind of talked about some initial kind of Christian responses we might have to that. But today we wanted to move the conversation on a little bit to talk about what might another way, a better way of transitioning from middle age and independence to old age dependence. You've been doing some writing and thinking about this, I think.
Yeah, I do think it's a really important issue, just both for wider society as a whole, and particularly, you know, for people of my age group. I've just had my 70th birthday. I already have this sort of sense that I'm living on borrowed time, that every day is a bonus. And of course, it's this new phenomenon that people of my age group are, we don't know what the future could hold, but potentially we could have 20, 25 years of healthy life ahead of us. And then the question comes, what are those years for? I mean, it's something we've talked about it before, haven't we, on a previous podcast. But I think it's a really important conversation. And still, it strikes me that by and large, not many people are having this conversation. As we talked about last week, that the primary response is all about, well, stay healthy as long as you possibly can, you know, be active, go to the gym, keep jogging, do your weight training, stave off eventual dependence as long as possible. And it's interesting, again, to look at different responses. And not surprisingly, one of the primary responses is to say, well, let's throw technology at this problem. You know, yes, we're going to have lots of lonely and increasingly disabled elderly people, but are there technological solutions which are going to help?
Yeah, and so you see this in things like the push at the moment towards smart homes, the connected home, which is obviously, you know, not exclusively a phenomenon for old people, but, you know, you can move beyond having a video doorbell that sends something to your phone when someone rings the doorbell, through to saying, well, let's put cameras in each room inside the house so we can keep an eye on Granny. We don't live anywhere near her. We live 500 miles away, but at least on our phones, we can get an alert when she falls over because she's wearing a watch that has fall detection, and we can check the temperature on the thermostat has come up okay. And it's effectively the idea, of, I guess, of outsourcing some of that care that was historically would be provided by family members or a paid care worker to smart tech.
That's right. And quite a lot of commercial companies and academics are actively working in this area. And of course, you can see, you know, technologically how a lot of this would work. And positively, it could mean that people can be maintained in their own home, elderly and dependent people, in a way that previously they would either have to have a live-in carer, a human carer, or else be admitted into some kind of institution. Hmm. But it's also pretty obvious as well what the ethical challenges that are raised. You know, is it, if you're living in a kind of panopticon, you know, the panopticon was the kind of prison that was invented by Jeremy Bentham as a sort of thought experiment. But it's that phrase has become widely used as a kind of a metaphor for living in the Brave New World. And
The idea was that in the prison, I think every cell could be seen simultaneously by one kind of warden. And so it's the idea that you are constantly under scrutiny. You're never in privacy. You're never truly alone in that sense. And you can see how that might work for a prison. But it is interesting to consider the idea that we are voluntarily potentially making our own homes these kind of like constantly surveilled properties.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, it wouldn't just be the loved ones that are doing the surveillance. It would be social workers and healthcare workers and nominated care workers and so on. You can imagine sort of banks of screens and clever smart software which alerts people. Mm. And yet, where's the privacy? You know, am I going to be watched when I go to the toilet? Am I going to be watched when I'm, you know, is everybody going to listen to my intimate conversations and interactions with loved ones? Is this a vision of old age we want to buy into?
And I suppose there's every chance as well that this becomes a service you can buy as a package. And so I don't know if it exists yet, but I wouldn't at all be surprised if in the near future you can pay a company effectively to rig up your loved one's home as a connected home, and then you also pay them a monthly fee to monitor the feeds. And so actually it's not even that it's being looked at by your grandchild or your whatever niece and nephew from miles away on their phone, but it's some, you know, underpaid minimum waged someone on a screen who is having to monitor you effectively to create peace of mind for the too busy, the cash rich but time poor relatives who haven't got time to do it themselves.
Yeah, it's a pretty bleak vision, isn't it, of future, and yet positively. I mean, I wouldn't be entirely negative about it, because I think what so many older people fear about the later stages of life is sort of residential accommodation, and it's the institutionalization. Much more. I mean, the care may be fine. It may be, you know, really clean, the food is good and all the rest. But the idea that I am now confined within a very rigid institutional, you have your cup of tea in the morning at this time, you know, breakfast is between 9 and 9:30, and then we have a playtime between 11 and 12, and then, you know, the games assistant comes along at 2, and, you know, everything is in this regimented institutionalized way. So at least having a smart home allows you to live your own life and to choose your own rhythms and decide when you get up and when you go to bed and so on.
And remain in the place that you might have lived for many decades as well. And we shouldn't underestimate the extent to which people obviously understandably get attached to their homes, but even more so if you get to old age and maybe your partner or spouse has died. The home is one of the few thing kind of constants you might have left, and so it is understandably very difficult often for older people to kind of countenance the idea of moving up and popping themselves in some, you know, bracingly cheery care home, which, as you say, might provide perfectly adequate care, but it still feels like an institution. It feels like you're back at school or in a hospital or something like that.
Mm. Yeah. So then thinking about other technological solutions, there's a lot of research and interest into so-called assistive technologies, sophisticated kinds of technologies which assist disabled or dependent people to live their own lives. And there's a huge range of devices, specialised motorised wheelchairs, through to devices that can assist with bathing and with changing beds and dressing and all that kind of stuff. And what I think turns out generally is that although we can see that this is really valuable, this kind of technology, it raises very considerable engineering and technological challenges.
It does. It's always my kind of rule of thumb with kind of cutting through kind of tech hype and Silicon Valley boosterism is always that software is 10 times easier than hardware. And, yeah, you know, AI technology is streets ahead when it's a chatbot like we've talked about in previous episodes, which can now eerily well mimic human speech. But trying to get, you know, a robot to actually have a physical hand that can lick down and pick up a grape off a table is staggeringly difficult. And, you know, the robots are in many cases still kind of embarrassingly backwards, often falling over and unable to hold their balance, get bamboozled by something as basic as a step in the or you know, can't turn a door handle. And so, yeah, it doesn't shock me at all to believe that people are finding it much easier to create a kind of souped up Amazon Alexa that can kind of talk to you in your old age rather than find a robot who can do a good kind of tuck you in at bed and fold the sheets and things like that.
Yeah, and so it does sadly seem that a lot of emphasis is being made on natural language processing, these devices that can talk to you and understand you, quotes, and listen to you and respond in the way that a friend would. Whereas you could imagine that really useful technology, which took the load off human carers, which allowed many of the back-breaking jobs of caring, of changing linen and dressing and bathing and all those kind of stuff, they could be really beneficial for the future and a very positive contribution to the care of the elderly.
I mean, in some sense, that's nearly an extension of what we already have. You know, we've long had things like stair lifts and things like that, which are a form of technology that we install into people's homes to allow them to kind of stay there for longer. But everyone understands a stair lift doesn't replace the need for human interaction and human care. And I could definitely believe that could go further. And as you say, we could have technology which could take some of the kind of practical logistical load off the shoulders of the human carers to give them time to focus on stuff that they can do much better than the tech, the companionship, the care, the human connection, the conversation.
Yes, and it's interesting that at least until recently, Japan has been the place on the country which has put most emphasis on this particular area of technology, because Japan has got a unique problem I think one of the most elderly populations on the planet, coupled with a very strict anti-immigration policy. Mm. So they don't have the numbers of carers who've come from low-resource countries, as would be the case in the UK and the US and many other Western countries. So Japan has got this unique double whammy and is therefore has seen this coming, and really for the past 20 years has had government-financed initiatives to develop this kind of assistive technology.
That's really interesting.
You're listening to Matters of Life and Death, a podcast from Premier Unbelievable.
And so, how do you think the church or Christians can do this better, or think differently about this, both kind of the growing burden of caring for the elderly and this kind of this fear that we all seem to have about being a burden and becoming dependent on others?
Well, I think the first thing to do is just to recognise the issue. And yet I'm struck by how little conversation there is going on about these kind of issues in general within churches and Christian communities. And I do think part of the problem is that the church leadership, it has its focus elsewhere, and particularly on the need to try to attract and retain young people and young families. And it's almost like it just takes elderly people as being a sort of a fact of life, but they're not the really important focus for church activities. I mean, do you think that's fair, or is that a caricature?
I think there's truth in it. I think certainly churches have been kind of fascinated and even obsessed with growing their population of younger people. There is good sense in that, in that if you don't do that, then you're, by default of aging, your congregation will eventually die. So you need young, fresh blood, to use a crude metaphor, to constantly be reviving and renewing a church congregation, as you would in any community of people, intergenerational community. So I think there is definitely, there is some kind of something that's just natural and good about the fact that we want to be bringing in new faces. Yeah. But I think for sure there is a sense in which, I think there's a source, but what complicates the issue is that we kind of presume that older people are not a mission field in their own right as well. You know, where is the evangelism to those in their 70s and above? It doesn't really exist. And I think there's this idea that they're either a lost cause, they're already Christians nominally or otherwise, so why waste your time? And that the real need is to reach people in their 30s and 20s or below. And actually, I think this country in particular has become so radically de-Christianized so quickly, actually, most elderly people probably don't have a living faith with Jesus and are just in need, as everyone else is, of being kind of called into community of faith and introduced to Jesus maybe for the first time.
Yeah, and I think there are hints to suggest that in some ways, and it may be, again, very simplistic, but I think there is some evidence to suggest that older people, particularly those in retirement and beyond, may be more open to learning about, what the Christian faith teaches. I think that a lot of baby boomers have gone through their life, and in many ways, they've hit the jackpot. They got free education, they bought their properties, they made a massive amount on their homes. They've got good jobs, not all, of course, but many, and good pensions and all the rest. And now they've got to the end, and they're in the saga Cruise age bracket, and they're saying, is that it? Is this really, is the next 20 years going saga cruises and golf courses and foreign travel? Is there more? Is there meaning? Is there purpose beyond that?
Yeah, I think that's probably really true. I mean, it does strike me that, your generation, the baby boomers, I think faces this demographic time bomb and the crisis of dependence in old age as a particularly acute fear, because you kind of came of age in the 1960s during that kind of era of tumult and independence and demolishing old certainties and strictures. And it was all about be who you want to be, regardless of what society thinks about you, and claim your own independence and your autonomy. And huge generalization, but that generation has also, as you say, achieved a lot of financial independence, through, steady jobs, good pensions, ever-rising house prices. And so I think the idea of then of this kind of regression, as it were, to a form of dependence, even though it is, as we said before, an entirely natural and quite healthy part of being a human, strikes a particular fear in the hearts of a baby boomers who have been told their whole life that they can have it all and be themselves and be their kind of self-actualizing individual, and suddenly they realize that was a lie they've been sold, because your money won't protect you from dementia, and your swinging 60s spirit is not going to stop you from being a burden and having to rely on others.
Yeah, I was really struck by this when I produced a report on assisted dying for the debate about assisted dying or physician-assisted suicide, which went in the House of Lords last autumn. And what struck me listening to that debate was how many really elderly lords and ladies in the House of Lords, you know, people in their 70s, 80s, even 90s, gave impassioned speeches in favour of changing the law to allow assisted dying. And it was based almost entirely on sort of horrifying stories of people who died in pain. And they were talking about themselves. I mean, this was existential angst about their own futures, and their only way they could face their futures was knowing that this law was on the statute book, and so if they had to, they could be killed and put out of their misery. So I think it is often older, frightened people who are reacting against the possibility of dependence, and yet I think there is a hunger for something more, a sense that the 60s didn't really deliver. You know, the theory was once we'd broken off all the shackles, once we'd, you know, derided traditional families and traditional mores, and each one of us could live our own lives, that we would enter into the sort of golden uplands of human existence, and actually we look around and it doesn't seem to be quite delivered.
And I think that's why there is a call on the church in this age and in this moment in our culture to speak into that and to say, actually, I'm afraid you were sold a bit of a lie, and that not only has this like total autonomy and independence not delivered for you, but actually it turns out dependence is actually a really good thing in some ways. You know, it comes it's complex, but like actually we were made by a creator to depend on the creator. We are creatures not intended to be, you know, wound up like a clock and set off and left alone, but we're created to be knitted into dense relationship, interdependent relationships, both with other human beings around us and ultimately with our creator God. And that's a lesson which, for sure, people like yourself and those facing, you know, imminent physical decline need to learn. But it's also a lesson that I need to learn, you know, as someone theoretically in the prime of my life, because I need to learn to put to death the idol of spiritual independence and recognize that actually I am most myself when I am actually relying on God and others.
That's right. There's a very interesting, profound quote from an American physician called John Dunlop, who'd had, you know, has had a lot of experience of caring for elderly people. And he said, there is an essential humility that makes us willing to be served. Throughout life, a desire for self-sufficiency can impair spiritual growth. And at the end of life, it's good to be less self-sufficient and trust God more fully. I thought it was really interesting, you know, that the desire for self-sufficiency can impair spiritual growth. That's quite a strong statement, isn't it? And yet I sense what he's saying.
Definitely. I mean, I remember you pointed me to a piece by the theologian Gilbert Mylander, who wrote an article called "I Want to Be a Burden to My Family," which is all about kind of like counteracting this idea that being that the worst thing possible would be to be a burden, and actually, you know, saying that actually it's enriching to be a burden to someone else. He has this quote: "Is this not in large measure what it means to belong to a family, to burden each other, and to find almost miraculously that others are willing, even happy, to carry such burdens?" It's a life of mutual burdensomeness, I think you once wrote.
Yeah, that's right. And there is something very profound in that, but also very countercultural, isn't it? Because, you know, a number of people have said to me how much it has meant to them to care for their elderly loved one in the last weeks, months of their life. Was something just to be able to do something very simple together, you know, cutting nails, helping someone to wash, actually took on a real significance, a profundity. And there is something about the symmetry, isn't it, that this is the person who cared for me when I was a baby. These are the hands that washed me, that protected me, that nurtured me. And now I am the one who is washing those hands. I am the one who's feeding them. There is something there. And yet I can just hear in my head, you know, people saying, yeah, but this is just sentimental rubbish. I mean, because the truth is that so many families are not like that. And, I, you know, I've heard of the sort of poignancy and almost... the real pain of somebody who was abused by their father and now caring for that same abusing father. So there can be... These things are complex, aren't they? And families are often broken.
Yeah.
And so we mustn't sort of over-sentimentalise this idea. But there is a kernel of truth there.
Definitely. No, I think that's a really good point. And I guess it's another way in which we see how... the brokenness of our sinful world breaks down all the good structures that God planned to be in place for us. And God's intent, I think, is clear from scripture and from natural law, as it were, is that the intent was that we would all be, you know, both raised by loving, caring parents and then in time grow to care for them as they need that. And of course, it is a tragedy that that's not the case for some children, that they aren't cared for, they are abused or abandoned. And that clearly it works both ways around. And I think clearly it's a tragedy that in reverse, there are some parents whose children don't care for them. I can't or won't care for them when they need that. But it doesn't take away from the fact that I think that is probably what God's heart was for us to experience.
That's right. And so one of the things I'm trying to tell myself, and you can remind me of this, Tim, is that we should be prepared to graciously let go progressively. Again, John Dunlop, the Christian physician, said, many of the losses associated with aging are inevitable and often forced upon us, but some things we can choose to give up voluntarily. And when we can see the losses coming, I have observed, says Dunlop, that it's much better to recognise them, plan for them, and make changes gradually and proactively, rather than waiting for a crisis to force a drastic change.
So what kind of changes are you thinking of there?
Well, I think it is sort of transferring responsibility. For instance, like finances... instead of, you know, hanging on to controlling all my finances and everything to the bitter end, I mean, my dad as he was very keen to try to explain to me as the eldest son, you know, what the financial situation was, what savings accounts he had, and so on. And that was extremely helpful. He really facilitated the process of handing over responsibility. And I think other things as well, like, you know, saying, you know, I can't drive anymore. And rather than I'm going to fight like crazy to keep driving as long as possible, saying, okay, let's hand that on. Let's be prepared to let go progressively.
And in many ways, church families can and should be stepping in or augmenting that kind of dependent care, you know. So the example of driving, you know, how much easier would it be for an older person to surrender their driving license without a fight if they felt confident that there was a network in their church community of people who had cars who would be able to give them lifts and committed to saying, you know what, I'm available, give me a call, let me know, and we can find a time to drive you where you need to drive. And that's also equally true of people, you know, who for various reasons, like we talked about family brokenness, maybe their own relatives can't or won't care for them. It wouldn't it be awesome if the church family was stepping into the breach there and saying, well, we'll be your family. We will be that thick network of interdependent relationships for you because your own kith and kin aren't around.
I think that's absolutely right. And I think so much of the fear that people have as they look into the future, older people have, is because they know very well that the health and social care frameworks in this country are desperately overburdened and struggling. And if they knew that the Christian family was prepared and to be involved and support them, that could make a vast difference, I think, as they look to the future. But of course, again, I think I want to emphasise that it's not just a one-way process, you know, that because older people have got a great deal to offer in terms of availability to others, in terms of life wisdom, being involved in intergenerational friendships, leaving a legacy for the next generation, passing on what they've learnt about God's faithfulness, providing a listening ear, prayerfulness, gratitude. You know, potentially, there's a lot that older people have to offer as a vital part of the whole church family.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Well, I think we've hit our time, so we probably need to draw this episode to a close. Thanks for coming on this journey, everyone, for listening over two episodes about aging and dependence and autonomy. I hope it's been interesting. There's lots of things on this topic you could find on John's website to read or watch or listen to, find out more or to kind of stimulate your own thinking. So do visit that. That's John Wyatt, WYATT.com. You can get in touch with us by emailing molad, molad@premier.org.uk. Otherwise, we will speak to you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Matters of Life and Death, a podcast from Premier Unbelievable.